My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Eitan Safardi, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you here, Eitan. Eitan is a serial entrepreneur with vast experience in the construction sector, first as an architect and afterward as the co-founder of See My Casa, a construction tech company he built and later sold to Autodesk. After the acquisition, Eitan became the general manager of Autodesk Israel, where he led the R&D center with 200 employees developing various construction tech products. And so that sort of gives us a little bit of background who you are, Eitan. I want to hear more about you. You have a fascinating bio. I want to hear it from you rather than having me read a bio. Go back to where you discovered architecture. Who inspired you, or maybe what inspired you to become an architect, and share your origin story to where you are today.
Wow, to go back. Sure, Mark. I would probably say, you know, my answer will not be so unique, because when you hear about who inspired me, a lot, I guess a lot of the audience that you have will say, oh, of course, I was inspired too by this architect. I was, you know, I think the first architect that I was inspired by was Frank Lloyd Wright, The Falling Water. This, yeah. You know, this one blew my mind. And later on, you know, when I, you know, did my first trip, you know, to Pennsylvania, I think it's over there, and saw it with my own eyes, it was even more impressive. Of course, it was smaller. Yeah. You know, it was almost like seeing some, you know, in the books, it looks like gigantic. And then when you go to the actual building, you say, oh my God, people was that short. But it is a remarkable piece of architecture. It is something that, you know, as a young architect, I just sat down and you know, took my sketchbook and just drew. Did some sketches.
How old were you when you first discovered Frank Lloyd Wright and realized he was an architect and that was something you were interested in?
22 or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So after so high school, pretty, college time, university time?
College, we do military service here. So okay. So it's before university. And then, you know, you just... You know, after the military service, most of us are, you know, just selecting a dot on the globe, and then you just travel.
Yeah.
So a lot of people go to South America. A lot of people, and I go to the U.S. and just to see. And then, you know, when I thought about, you know, architecture, that was the moment. You know, the Falling Water was the most impressive.
So you went to visit building that. So you went to visit and so what happened after that? You went to visit and recognized the house and where'd you go from there?
And in a way, you know, decided that, you know, I was fascinated with buildings even before that, but, and then, you know, looking at books and looking at buildings and, you know, the first thing I saw, you know, this remarkable piece in some of the books. And then after the trip, you notice buildings more. I can, you know, there is a joke about architects when, you know, when you're traveling, you're with your head up all the time because
yes.
You're looking at buildings
yeah.
rather than the scenery, rather than, you know, the sidewalk. but yeah, that, you know, that's after that, I decided to go to school, to architecture school. I guess, you know, a story that is common to many architects is that you recognize, you know, two sides of your brain that are working. One is more artistic mm-hmm. and one is more technical, and you're not too artistic, so you don't want to do just art, and you're not too technical, and you're not going to be an engineer, right? So I guess this is kind of common to many of my fellow architects. So you just choose architecture.
Yeah. And where did you go to school?
Tel Aviv University.
Okay. And then what happened after university?
Even you know, during university, I experienced a crisis with the profession. I told my my professor that I'm having a crisis. So she told me, you know what, Eitan, get used to it. we architects, we experience this crisis every year since we graduate.
That's not a crisis. That's architecture.
Exactly. That's the definition of the profession. You didn't know that. So I said, no, I didn't know that. But afterwards, you know, after school, and, you know, another anecdote, which is really interesting, that once, you know, during my studies, when I decided that maybe it's not going to be my profession, my grades were actually higher. My work was actually better because I was not stressed with what everybody says about what I'm doing. I was just doing, you know, the things that I like to do. And I guess, you know, great architecture comes from passion, comes from the things that you really like enjoying doing. And when you enjoy your work, you enjoy your craft, you're producing great stuff. So, I truly believe in that until today.
So how did you get from university to the tech side of everything?
Okay. The tech side of it was always there. I was playing with code, with HTML, with CSS, with JavaScript, even as during my studies. You know, I remember that I was in charge of the computer lab in the university, and you know, just to kind of you know, fulfill this passion of tech. So that was always a part of my personality, to do the combination tech and architecture. Even during my, you know, my first year as architect, I was always trying to make things more efficient to the offices that I worked in. I was always seeing the architecture office or the architecture company that I was working in as, how should I put it, as a non-tech environment, not very efficient in its, you know, technical thinking, its process thinking. It was more of an artist trying to manage a business. That this is what I felt when I started working in architecture firms.
Yeah. I think a lot of architects feel that they're artists trying to run a business and feel very unqualified for that. So how did you get to beyond that? How did you get past that part of the business?
So I think after a few years in the profession, there was a point that I, you know, you pretty much, you get experience in what you do, you get your craft better. You know that you can even open your own practice. I think every architect, and I think a lot of your, you know, the people that are listening to us are young architects who open their practice, right? You know, right. They spend some time in an office, they learn, they understood, they can do multifamily, they can do offices, they can do apartments, can do a lot of things. And even if they didn't do everything in architecture, you feel pretty good about you working as an independent, as a sole practitioner. And this is where every architect is thinking, okay, what should I do next, right? It's this moment that you say, okay, I'm not going to go to another office and work for another 5 years, and I'm thinking about being independent, running my own show. And then I said, I have to do something that answers my passion. And my passion was tech and construction, tech and architecture. And I said, I think it was 2006, 2007. And if you remember that era, Mark, Steve Jobs just announced the iPhone, right? You know, yeah. The iPod was already there. It was announced the Apple. A year later, he announced the iPad. The world of technology was booming, right? It was intensive. So for me, it was, okay, this is the time to do a startup.
Yeah, and it was pre-recession. It was booming. The economy was booming. Everybody had money. A lot of tech companies were born right around that time.
Right. Actually, the first year of the startup was 2008. So heads up, if I'm deciding to open a new startup, there is something wrong with the world, like the world crisis in 2008.
Yeah.
Today, a global pandemic.
Yeah.
So the next time I will let you know that I'm thinking about the new startup.
Right. Let us all know so we can prepare for the next big problem.
Yeah. So I opened a new startup. I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship, about management, about everything that I know today. I was a young architect. I had a tech side and just, found a co-founder. It was a technological co-founder to work with me in this startup. And we thought, there are so many tech advancements. Why don't we use it to do better planning, right? So we did See My Casa, and this is how See My Casa was born. And it was, how do you leverage, the iPad, the iPhone in order to generate 3D scenes? And if you generate 3D scenes automatically, can you do the interior design with, drag and drop furniture, drag and drop appliances, both web, mobile, and the business model was let's call all the IKEA of the world, the furniture companies of the world to get ranked in our interior design app. And it was great because I learned a lot about business. I made huge mistakes as an entrepreneur. I learned that one of my first customers was Sears when Sears was a big name, I remember flying to the US, getting on a taxi to Hoffman Estate to meet, I think, number three in Sears, and he actually signed a deal with me. That was kind of It was super surprising that I don't think I had a suit to the meeting. I was coming pretty, as I am today. And then I kind of found out that everything is possible. If I just signed a deal with Sears, after like one or two meetings, I'm on the right track, right? And See My Casa was a great experience for me. After 4.5 years, it was acquired by Autodesk. And Autodesk, that many of your audience, use their software, and also pay the fee, per seat when you license their software, was a great school for me for how to develop software, manage people, expand my networking in the real estate and construction world. Spend some time in San Francisco in the headquarters. Great place to relocate and spend time. And then went back to Israel to be the general manager of the Israeli R&D center, which was also a great experience and taught me a lot. Through these years, I went to Harvard Business School to do the executive program to expand my knowledge and my skills around management. So that was also a great experience being in Boston in the dormitories at Harvard. It's a dream come true.
When you went to Harvard, was it after the acquisition and before you went back to Israel, or where did that happen?
After the acquisition, actually, after I got back to Israel, There was a point that I wanted to do, to expand my skills and, just ask the Autodesk, my manager at Autodesk that I want to do, business school. And Autodesk was very, very nice to me and said, yeah, we believe in you. We think you can go to executive roles here and we want to invest in you. I don't know if sadly or how to describe it, but a year after I decided to go back to entrepreneurship. but this is life, right? The entrepreneurship bug was always there, even from the architecture studies, it was there. So I just had to do another startup because there was a huge opportunity in the world. And you can see how construction tech and prop tech today is booming, right? Think about 2007, 2008, there was no even the term construction tech. Nobody knew construction.
Way early.
Said construction tech or I went to VCs to get the funding for my venture and they told me, why are you doing things with construction? They didn't understand why. But today everybody understand why. It's a huge market. There are huge opportunities. The market adopts, even architects adopt technologies much faster than anyone else in the industry. So that's huge opportunity to do business.
So you were with Autodesk for 4 years, you said?
4 years at Autodesk. And then after Autodesk, I thought about all kind of ideas in architecture, construction. I even played around a little bit with 3D printing, which is a hype, was a hype in a few years ago. I still think that 3D printing has more hype than a solution. We can talk about this also. We can have a whole new, an entire podcast about that.
We'll invite you back for that because I want to get into AI and what you're doing with Swap. So,
but AI is, AI is, I wouldn't say it's the future, it's the present. It's the present, it's what architecture, AI should be in the core of architecture today. I'm happy that in Swap we do that every day. I do think that everybody will do that, and with or without Swap, people will understand in the industry that AI, deep technology, will be in the core of what we do.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode is brought to you by BQE, the makers of BQE Core, systems and standard operating procedures. You already know that that's how to build a profitable business and find the freedom you want. You need systems and procedures. But you struggle with choosing which systems you need most and how to implement those systems quickly so you can get back to doing what you love most. The Designing Your Business Masterclass series was created by acclaimed architect and business consultant Douglas Teeger to help fellow architects and engineers run their firms more profitably while maintaining a healthy work-life balance. Douglas grew from a solo practitioner to become managing partner of his 30-plus person firm and then later sold his firm so he can do what he does today, helping architects be more successful at Teeger Consulting. On the third Wednesday of every month, Douglas dives deep into an essential topic that will strengthen the profitability of your firm and make it sustainable for growth in the years to come. Register now for the next Designing Your Business Masterclass with Douglas Teeger at bqe.com/masterclass and start implementing powerful systems for the profitability you need and the freedom you want. Every live masterclass session includes AIA continuing education credit, and when you visit bqe.com/masterclass, you'll have access to the full library of past sessions on demand. The Designing Your Business Masterclass is free, and it's brought to you by our friends at BQE, the makers of BQE Core, the software that makes it easy to manage your projects and people for maximum productivity and ultimate profitability. Register now for the Designing Your Business Masterclass at bqe.com/masterclass. That's bqe.com/masterclass. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. There's a lot to love about being an entrepreneur architect, right? But trying to figure out your financials on your own is not one of those things. Luckily, there's FreshBooks, the all-in-one accounting solution that's built for business owners like us. FreshBooks takes all the not-so-fun parts of running a business, from building and tracking invoices to managing online payments to organizing expenses, and automates them with features like the new digital bills and receipt scanner, saving you up to 11 hours per week in the process. 11 hours. FreshBooks has your back at tax time too. It's almost tax time. With a ton of reports to choose from, you'll know exactly where your business stands, and you can easily hand the keys over to your accountant so they can take over when it's time to reconcile everything for the year. Try FreshBooks. Try FreshBooks for free for 30 days. No credit card required. It's free. Go to FreshBooks.com/architect. FreshBooks.com/architect to get started today. That's FreshBooks.com/architect. So, what will you do with your 11 more hours each week? This episode is brought to you by Arcat.com. We all have that one story, that one project that had such a unique situation that it required a solution that you had rarely considered before. We share these stories in private professional circles with our friends and our colleagues, but there has never been a collection of these stories of conflict and triumph all in one place. Until now. Detailed is a podcast series that features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who share their insights and expertise as they highlight some of the most complex, interesting, and oddball building conditions that they have ever encountered, and the ingenuity it took to solve them. Join host Charisse Lakeside, aka CSI Kraken, a senior specifications writer at RDH Building Science, as she uncovers lessons learned to help you navigate similar challenges that may arise in your next project. Detailed, an original podcast by Arcat. Listen and subscribe right now at arcat.com/podcast. That's arcat.com/podcast. arcat.com/podcast. Detailed. Every building has a story. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Let's start at the very beginning. First of all, for anybody who doesn't realize, AI is artificial intelligence. And so it's using computers to make some decisions and make some at a very basic level. So Eitan, can you explain to me what SWAP is and how it is affecting the process of architectural design?
Of course. And before I'm even describing it, I want people not to be scared of AI. Because sometimes when you say AI and you refer to a traditional industry, people will probably just think, oh my God, AI will replace us.
Right. That's a big fear.
You know, like people thought about, like people thought, you know, when there was, you know, remember in the past when you bought flying tickets, so you had to go to a person and actually buy the flying ticket. Today, you just go to computer and just da-da-da-da-da and you put everything and you have a flying ticket. But doesn't mean that people from the tourism disappeared. They changed their profession. The profession was changed. And this is what I think about how SWAP is affecting the industry. The architecture profession will be changed, and the people will stop doing, architect will stop doing tedious, repetitive work, and they will leverage their human advantage, the human expertise, in order to combine it with what the computer can generate for them. So in a nutshell, what SWAP is doing, we call ourselves an AI-driven architecture practice. We are doing architecture, you know, but in comparison to many of the companies that you might have heard of, that they're just doing software to help architects, or, you know, or like Revit or AutoCAD or a lot of, you know, apps. What we did was pretty different. We said, okay, we are going to take the role of the architect. We're still going to, let's say, a real estate developer, tell him, you should use a platform to design, to plan your home. This platform will combine human expertise, like there will be architects. We have in-house architects, and everything that AI can offer you. And this will make the process much more faster, automated where it should be automated. Not everything should be automated. Very, very efficient, minimizing errors, human errors, and optimizing for specific results, because the computer, the AI always try to optimize. This is kind of the, this is what's so unique about using a machine to generate plans. So SWAP, in a way, is a new architecture form. It's a combination between an architecture practice and a tech company. Everything that we do as architects, we are teaching the machine to do in the next project, right?
Interesting.
So in a way, you can think about us as a very, very efficient architecture practice. Our in-house architects are using the most advanced technology. Our algorithms, our algorithm developers and AI experts are teaching their algorithms how to plan, how to think. And once you do one, you learn, you keep learning and do the next one and the next one better and better and better. This is how AI works. It's a learning system. It's a learning process. This is in a nutshell. What we discovered in the process is that our best partners are architects, architecture companies, because when you understand that this is the future and what SWAP is generating is something that after you see the system in action, you're thinking, oh my God, why should I spend time on this? The computer can do it. Like, think about a multifamily project, right? So first of all, the mixture, the two bedroom, percentage of the three bedroom, four bedroom, the communal spaces, everything. The mixture itself, you just input into the machine and you get like a massing, the first massing according to a specific typology, double load corridor, Texas donut, whatever you choose. After you have that, every architect will tell you that he pretty much knows what he's going to build. Like the design decisions are there. So if you teach the computer basic design decisions, like, and I'm not talking even about the code, with the code is, the egress path, and just the design decisions of the architect, you can actually click a button and generate the entire building, the detailed design. And in simple buildings, you can teach the machine to do that better and better and better. And in a way, the architect can now think about himself as solving the more complex problem and when to be creative in this specific building, and not generating, of course, the model. He doesn't need to draw so many hours. In a way, in the future, I think the people that listen to us will stop billing by the hour. Because when you bill by the hour, you actually force your customer to a model that if it takes like 1 month to draw, you should pay me for the 1 month of just drawing the project. but your end customer really pays you for the value that you provide as an architect. If you solve a complex problem, if you know someone in the local authority that can help you get the right project, if you, and these are the things that, that humans should keep doing. We don't have an algorithm to talk to a specific person in a local authority, right? We don't have an algorithm to, put some creativity in a way that in a way that results from human intuition. We're not there yet. So humans has a lot of place in the planning process, but there is an entire, and every architect will tell you, like there is an entire bulk of work that you should teach the computer to do. And practically it's just an advancement or evolution of what happens in the past. If you think about what is AutoCAD or Revit, people, when I studied architecture, we had pens and papers and T rulers, and we did that. And with AutoCAD, you don't need that. So AutoCAD, in a way, the first AutoCAD told architect, you don't need to do all that stuff. Was that artificial intelligence? In a way, it was, because you don't need to draw, or let's say that you have a building with so many windows. Architects in the past drafted window by window. He just did it, right? Even if it was the same window 50 times, someone did it with a pen and paper. But AutoCAD came along and said, you just copy or array or do something in one click. So technology is advancing. And the computer is becoming smarter. That's the reality. So it's not just you clicking and copy paste whatever you did, like the window. You just need to tell the computer, hey, I just want a multifamily building in Lee County. And this is the mixture. By the way, I want a below grade parking. And please, artificial intelligence, I want everything today with the construction documents, right?
Yeah.
This is swap. This is swap.
It sounds like swap is basically doing the hours and hours and hours of work that architects do to get to the point where they can be creative, right? So if they have a building, a multifamily building, to continue with the same example, when they start with that project, they spend days getting the model together, right? They know the basic outline. They know the basic parameters of this building. They have to spend time putting together that model in order to get to the level where they can be creative with it. And so it sounds like what SWAP is doing is taking all that time of that repetitive work that is needed to design another multifamily building, and gets you instantly to the point where you can be creative and solve a problem very quickly for a client that the computer can't solve, right? Getting to the point where the architect is doing the things that the computer, the AI, cannot do, and much more efficiently. So potentially we make a lot more money.
Exactly. You can take more projects. I'm visiting Texas next month. I'm visiting a few architecture firms, or a few architecture companies, and also sole practitioners. And what I told them that we have customers, real estate developers, that told us that they want to build in Texas. I'm not a local architect. So what I offered them is for them to be my partner. You know the local authorities. You know, you already built there. Why don't we partner? I mean, let's take together 10 projects together, not just one, because you have like one or two employees. You know, you don't need to hire too many people in order to be creative and get a lot of projects. The reason that you need to hire 100 people to deal with 10 different projects is just to model them in Revit or to draw them, right? You know, the first, you know, the zoning, the research, the creativity is not taking so long. Most of the project is going to drafting and generating construction documents and the details and so on. And this can be, a lot of this can be done by computer. So what we've done, we just partnered with architects all over the world, local architects. Sometimes we bring the customer, sometimes they bring the customer. And together we are, you know, one plus one is like, you know, equal 10 projects. This is what we do today. And we love partnering with architecture firms because it's always a way for us to see how creative the humans are and how the technology is kind of completing everything that they do, which is it's an amazing journey for me as an architect.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And if anybody wants to go check out what Swap is doing, it's Swap with two P's. So swap.net is where you want to go. That's the website. You can go see what Swap can do. What is your thought, Eitan, on the future of architects and architecture, right? This is very, very early, and it's very, very rapidly developing. And, you know, lots of the current responsibility of architects is going to be replaced by tech. There's a role for architects in the future. From your point of view, what is that role? What do architects what will they need to evolve to become in order for them to not become obsolete?
First of all, they need to come back to what they were doing in architecture school. In architecture school, it's kind of funny to remember, you were actually practicing architecture. You were not drawing hours after hours in order to, you know, meet certain, code requirements or counting parking stalls or calculating areas. Nobody asked you to do that. When you were in architecture school, for the audience that listened to us, you know, remember what you did. You were really planning. You were really thinking. You're being creative. If your professor told you, hey, let's do a gallery or let's do, a neighborhood, and you're really thinking about, as a human, what should be there. And I think this is the future of architecture. It will take, the artificial intelligence, all these advancements in technology will take the architecture back to what they were intended to do in the first place, to plan, to be creative, to understand their local communities and design better homes and better places for them. But they can do it without all the tedious work, without all the technical work, and without spending hours and hours and hours of generating the models and checking the areas and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. Cause I think that's one of the biggest fears from architects that are listening to us. You know, they're seeing the technology being developed. And one of the things I talk about all the time here on the podcast is that as architects, we need to embrace technology. We need to get involved in the development of technology.
Yeah. And
become part of that evolution rather than fight it, rather than reject it. Because if you reject it, it's going to steamroll right over the top of you and it will make you obsolete. There are other industries and other professionals will gladly take your place as the problem solver. And so it is imperative that architects be aware of what's being developed and become part of the that process, become part of the solution of those technologies and get involved in them and learn with them and use them to become more successful.
Yeah, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Always, take part in the revolution and not just wait for it to, and then you'll get behind. So always, I always tell to young architects and even older ones, with or without me, without Swap, it will happen.
Right.
So you better be prepared.
Right. Right. So let's come back to today. I want to ask the final question that I ask everybody. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
That's a very good question. I think a small architecture firm, first of all, you have to have patience. In our industry, and I know this industry, it's true across the globe, you probably will have like 2 years without many projects. So don't put your head down and then just think about, you know, closing the business. You have to, you know, hang in there, because this is part of our profession, is to hang in there and to wait and to initiate all kind of things in order to get the business. Of course, improve your business skills. Don't forget, this is a business. I mean, if you haven't studied in business school, go take a course in business. Understand what is a financial statement. What is a cost of a business? How do you generate revenues? What will be your best product? Don't take multiple loss leaders. Take just one. Not every building should be a landmark, right? Spend your time. See where the money coming from. You know, if you have to do a lot of apartments and it's boring, hell, do it all apartment. It's boring, but this is what pays the bills. This is what pays the salaries of your employees. And do one landmark in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. You don't need to everything to be in the magazine. And of course, embrace technology. Embrace technology through partnerships. Embrace technology through reading what's out there, adopting automation, plugins. Move from AutoCAD to Revit now. Don't do 2D anymore. Think about your process in 3D. It's hard, but you have to do it. What else can I say? I have so many tips. The best tip, Call Swap, will help you.
Call Swap. You can check them out on the internet. Swap.net, two P's, swap.net. Eitan Safari, thank you very, very much for coming by and sharing your knowledge with us. Fascinating work that you're doing at Swap. It's something that I'm very interested in, and I want to bring to our community so they're aware of what's happening and what's available to them, because it's there. It's there available to you. So you can go check it out right now. You can see how it works and get involved with it. So swap.net. Eitan, thank you very much for the work that you're doing and for sharing your knowledge today at Entree Architect Podcast.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you very much for having me.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, go write a review. I would love to know what you think of this podcast, and it helps other architects find us. So go do 5-star rating if you like it. Share, write a review, I'd love it. And share a link to this episode with a friend, because that's how we've grown. That's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands of architects throughout the world, just like you. Thank you to our sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and BQE for their support of this episode. I ask you to support them because they support us. And if they're supporting us, they're supporting you. So go support them. Got it? Go support our sponsors. Links to our sponsors, so you can click on those links and go right to them. Links to our sponsors and all the resources we shared today are available at the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. All the shows are there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows. I think there are 11 of them there now. Go there, gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. And I hope you're going to join us in Austin November 1st through November 3rd, 2022. Those are the dates for the Entree Architect Community Annual Meeting, our first ever live and in-person conference for you, the small firm architect community. Visit entrearchitect.com/annual meeting right now to learn more. That's entrearchitect.com/annual meeting, and I will see you in Austin in November. Don't miss this. This is going to be great. entrearchitect.com/annual meeting. It's a conference for you, small firm architects. Thank you for listening today to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, and share what you know.